This is the Pulse of New Hampshire. I am J-Dog, and joining me right now is a true renaissance man, in addition to being an advocate for above-the-neck health and wellness, as well as being an advocate for education. He is also a scholar. He is also a swell dancer. He is also a neat dresser. He is also a baseball awards presenter and Eddie Papowski's number one fan and Steve Ballmer's roommate at college at Harvard, by the way. He is a doting grandfather, a loving husband, and a fantastic father, and an author as well. He is the president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental and the host of Northeast Delta Dental Radio. He is the one, the only, Tom Raphael. Tom, how are you?
Thank you, Jay. I'm taking you everywhere I go because the community's been opened up now for almost a year. I'm out almost every night doing talks. So I think I'm going to drag you along everywhere I go.
Very nice. I'm all for that.
With that introduction. But let me introduce today's guest, Tana Clues, who's the CEO of New Hampshire Women's Foundation. And Tana and I go way back. So I think, Tana, to start with, obviously you're the CEO of New Hampshire Women's Foundation, but you have an illustrious and robust career. So tell us your career and how you ended up leading New Hampshire Women's Foundation. And I think many of your experiences make you the ideal leader for the New Hampshire Women's Foundation. But take your time and detail for the listening audience your professional career, and I'll add to it as well. But go ahead, please.
Well, thanks, Tom. Thanks so much for having us. Thanks to Delta Dental support of the Women's Foundation. I'm thrilled to be here today. It feels like fall outside. I'm not sure how we've suddenly snapped our fingers. Maybe the last hurricane brought fall to us. But just quickly, the Women's Foundation invests in opportunity equality for women and girls in New Hampshire. We're the state's only community foundation focused on gender equality with a focus on women, girls, and marginalized genders. You and I go way back because before running the Women's Foundation, I did work with you and the Charitable Foundation, the Community Foundation, the Department of Education on workforce development and thinking about the way in which we're training the next generation of leaders to fill much needed roles throughout the state where we have a shrinking population. Yet we know that those jobs that may not necessarily require a college degree, but do require a certificate. There's a lot of openings there, and we know we have to continue to increase the workforce there. And before that, I think I actually met you because I used to run an organization in Maine called Educate Maine, which did that throughout the state, and New Hampshire had been looking to create some version of that organization in New Hampshire. And since I lived in New Hampshire on the seacoast, I was the person who kind of helped you guys move in that direction. But really, I think it was you and your colleagues, leaders throughout the state who were so committed to building the next generation of the workforce that really, really deserves the recognition there. I was thrilled to finally kind of merge my passion and my education. I have a law degree. I went to Northeastern Law for my JD. Before that, I'd been at Smith College where I majored in sociology and women's studies. So it took me 20 years to get to a place where I could say that I used those degrees in a very specific way. But I've been leading organizations for the past 15 years, and really think that having the opportunity to use my skills in terms of advocacy, fundraising, networking is really my calling. And I'm so pleased to be able to do this on behalf of the Women's Foundation.
And how fortunate is the New Hampshire community that after two decades, you found your passion and were able to lead, you know, the perfect organization for you to lead. And just to give you a shout out, so what Tana was alluding to is it's still a very vibrant and robust group, but we have a group called the New Hampshire Coalition for Business and Education. And it was really modeled along the lines of the work that Tana was doing in Maine. And in particular, one of the SMART goals, strategic, measurable, achievable, realistic, time-based goal was 55 by 25 in New Hampshire, which was that by the year 2025, which back then seemed like a million years from now, but it's like literally a year and a half from now. that we'd have 55% of the adult population with either a certificate or a degree. So that work that we did initially with Fred Coker, still goes on. So how terrific. I always love it when people find their passion and what they, you know, what they were trained for. So,
well, you know, Tom, just to jump in quickly and follow up on that, I think certainly education advocacy was and continues to be my passion. I think it the disparities within New Hampshire and throughout New England persist, and we see that in the reports that the Women's Foundation does. You know, many of the foundational elements that I did in education advocacy, we're still doing now, because as we both know, education, healthcare, those are core tenets to having a successful society and being able to hopefully find your way into a prosperous life, whatever that might mean, but certainly a healthy life. And again, that goal of 55 by 25, that really speaks to the disparities we see in New Hampshire in different areas of the state where you have an overabundance of educated individuals, and then in other areas where you have an underabundance of that. And that continues to be our in our status of girls report, as well as our status of women report. You see those education indicators, and they speak to many of the things that you and I were both working on then as well.
Absolutely. And getting me all energized, re-energized.
Well, we have to keep you in that work, honestly. You know,
education, early learning, healthcare, you know, above the neck health, mental health, world. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all, you know, that's all what I have passion for. So it is, of course, you know, all related. And just to kind of maybe start at the end, and then we'll circle back to the beginning. I mean, companies, for example, that do have gender balance, you know, on the board and the management team are more successful. So long before the events of 2020, and you remember Connie Roy-Jakowski, she was our VP of HR, just retired in the last couple of years and really an icon in the field. Well, she and I have been working on, you know, gender balance on our board, and we have like 42 board members between our three states, New Hampshire, Maine, and Vermont. And when I started in 95, you know, maybe there were like three women. Well, right now, out of the 42, there are 22 women and 20 men. And then on the VP team, you know, it's now half and half. So if you work at it, that ultimately, you know, one of our secret sauces of success, which is you have that diversity, it ends up with, you know, positive results. And then it's a beautiful circle, because then, you know, people have the more opportunities. So the report, Voice, Money, and Power, and that's one of your strategic priorities. Tell us a little bit more about that, and what do you mean by that? And you kind of mentioned it with regard to the philanthropic landscape.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, because you just keep on saying great things, I want to reflect on what you just said, which I think you and Connie and Northeast Delta Dental were really ahead of the curve. I think Forbes, again, this year, I think the latest is, I think it's something like 87% of time, what they've shown in their research, that businesses and nonprofits that are working towards gender equality tend to make better business decisions. And that those that have less diverse teams are more likely to make poor choices. We see that also in the PACS fund and a variety of different pooled funds, where we're seeing that returns on profit for organizations that have adopted this model are doing quite well. They're outperforming. So it isn't just a case of fairness. In fact, I think one can also make the case of profit as well, that the more diverse your team is, the more successful your team will be.
And that's what I try to do, Tana, too. And I don't need to tell you how to do your job, but to get people's attention, I kind of, I sometimes start with the results, you know, so they can see that not only is it the right thing to do, you know, to have gender balance, to have, you know, BIPOC population on your board and in your employee base, but it also leads to, you know, better results. So if responsible for the profitability of your organization, and I even there mean nonprofits. I know nonprofit technically is nonprofit, but no money, no mission. So if So if you're not successfully fundraising and getting results, then you won't even be able to do your mission for nonprofits. But if you look at all the studies, and they're all out there. That's the great thing now, is that you can just Google this and you'll get all this information that I'm hoping that everybody believes it in their heart, you know, level five leadership. But but even if they can't go there yet, I mean, it does definitely mean, better results. So thank you for pushing that. Before we go to the break, we'll spend more time after the break. But tell us about the Women Building Community Luncheon, which is coming right up on October 9th. On October 19th, you were saying that the fall weather is in the air, and I can't believe you know we're talking about we're in October. This is close to your 20th year, your 19th annual, and you have a terrific speaker. So tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So this will be our 19th annual Women Building Community Luncheon. It's October 19th in Manchester. We usually have at least 600 women and men in attendance. It's our largest event of the year. This year, our speaker is Elizabeth Nyamero. She's an author, humanitarian, former United Nations senior advisor on gender equality. And she's also the founder of the He for She campaign, which you may have heard of, which was a global campaign to show solidarity for gender equality. And we're excited to have her join us on October 19th. There's a variety of different sponsors and sponsorship opportunities. And again, we're thrilled to have Delta Dental participate in that.
And we always will. We want to expand on that, Jay, but why don't you give out the contact information for the New Hampshire Women's Foundation, and then we'll return to this conference right after break.
Absolutely. Tana Clues is the CEO of the New Hampshire Women's Foundation. She's the guest this week on Northeast Delta Dental Radio. NHWomen'sFoundation.org. That's the website. You can also call 603-226-3355. Again, 603-226-3355, nhwomensfoundation.org. We'll have more of this on Northeast Delta Dental Radio here on the Pulse of New Hampshire. It's the Pulse of New Hampshire. I'm Jay Dogg alongside Tom Raffio, President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental and the host of Northeast Delta Dental Radio. This week's guest is Tana Clues. She is the CEO of New Hampshire Women's Foundation. nhwomensfoundation.org is the website. And you can also call 603-226-3355. Having a great conversation about the organization and a lot more. And Tom and Tana, take it away.
Thanks, Jay. So, Tana, back to Elizabeth Nyamara. How did you, because I know all about her work. She founded He for She Global Solidarity and Gender Equality. How did you land her? That's terrific. Good job.
Thank you. You know, we try to vary our program a bit. Some years we bring in a national speaker. Other years we might showcase women within the state. Last year, as you may recall, it was the 50th anniversary of Title IX. So we had the opportunity to showcase several of New Hampshire's incredible athletes. We had Penny Pitou, who was New Hampshire's first Olympian, ski racer who lives up in the Lakes region. We also had another wonderful panelist who had trained in New Hampshire and is currently training for the Olympics, a track athlete, and what will likely be in the NCAA's first trans athlete who's competing in the Olympics. So in terms of this year and Elizabeth, you know, surprisingly enough, or maybe not surprising to you, we're doing some really great things in New Hampshire. The Women's Foundation, the New Hampshire Women's Foundation, is known across the country as being an organization that is able to merge our philanthropy and advocacy in a way that is both meaningful and impactful. And we have a real commitment and from men in the state around gender equality. And when we made the ask, she said yes. So we're really excited to be able to bring her here to talk about something that I think a lot of people aren't necessarily talking about out loud, which is what is men's role and the larger role of individuals in our society to lift up gender equality.
And we'll get to that question momentarily. I just want to put a plug in for this luncheon. We are a silver sponsor, but there are plenty of other silver, gold, platinum, and other sponsorship opportunities. So you go, if you go on nhwomensfoundation.org, you'll see those opportunities. So thank you for bringing Elizabeth. And I think you're right. It does definitely speak to the fact that your organization is kind of used as a benchmark for other similar organizations, you know, across the world. And I think the way you described it is a combination, you know, of the fundraising and advocacy is, you know, really terrific. So let's talk about men's role in supporting gender equality. You know, as I basically alluded to, I was fortunate. The best hire I ever did was back in 1997. I hired Connie Roy Jakowski, who was working at the City of Manchester, and to kind of quote her, she was kind of stifled down there at the time, and was able to. So I got to know her and gave her an offer. And before she even mentioned what exactly the job was, she said, I'll do it. And so we were able to kind of partner together, and she taught me an awful lot. So what can men in general do to get more involved to support gender equity inequality?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that question. And shout out to Connie. I completely agree. As you know, she's one of our board members. She leads our governance committee, and she's a really wonderful individual and humanitarian, quite frankly. And I feel like she's as busy in her retirement as she was when she was at Delta Dental.
Tell me about it. I still get the emails at midnight, and I'm glad that she's on your governance committee because that's one of her many areas of expertise. And the thing about getting those midnight emails, though, Tana, she also expects me to respond by 5 a.m. So before I go to bed, I check my Connie RC email address to see if I got anything.
That's so funny.
A good one.
Yeah. So it's a great question about how men can be involved. And really, you know, in some ways, we're going beyond just talking about men and women and really thinking about gender expansive individuals. So, you know, as we know, women make up 50% of the population, 50% of the workforce. In some areas, it's more. In some areas, it's less. And most men seem to come to this work because they have a mother, a daughter, a wife, someone that has really either helped them see or they have seen through that woman's eyes, the importance of equality. So I already cited a few minutes ago what we know to be true in terms of the pocketbook and investments that organizations that are supporting women who have some diversity-focused work do better. We know that in terms of investments. We know that in terms of performance. We know that in terms of the research they've done around decision-making. The way men can really get involved, I believe, is to recognize the privilege in which they stand or sit, and recognizing how if they sit at a table of power, how they can make seats for additional voices. Voices and individuals who don't look like themselves. So in the case of women, again, in New Hampshire, when it comes to power, that usually is tied in one way or another to the C-suite, or it's tied to elected office. And in New Hampshire, like many other states across the country, we have less than 35% of our legislature is made up of women. I'm sure you've heard this before, more than 40% of the towns in New Hampshire don't have a single woman in power in that state. In other words, they don't even sit on a town council. So when you have 40% of your towns led entirely by men, that means you're losing the experience, the knowledge, and really that opportunity to be able to have either a city, a town, a business that is able to showcase the voices of women and girls. So again, I would say that it's looking at the way in which you can increase access for women in your leadership, in your opportunities that you have, whatever place you sit, there are ways in which you can give voice to women and girls and marginalized genders. And although we are a predominantly white state here in New Hampshire, there is no reason why we can't also be making space for and should be making space for people of color. There are many, many opportunities and many organizations that are even doing training specifically for those communities. So if you are wondering how you can engage more women of color on your board, more women of color in your leadership programs, you can go to the Women's Foundation or a number of other organizations to help see some of that, some of those resources.
And it really just, it really does have to be intentional. Once we made it our intent to get gender balance and have BIPOC representation on our board, it took a while, but it happened methodically and clearly, over time. But you definitely, need to be intentional. And I'm glad you mentioned about the local political system, because people see New Hampshire and they say, well, for many years you've had a woman governor and the federal delegation, has been a few years there completely women, and now 3 out of 4. But when I've kind of studied this, I support exactly what you said, that at the local level, ironically, you don't see that the representation that you do at the at the federal level. So that was a terrific point.
We know that New Hampshire or Granite Staters have the capacity and the willingness to vote for women based on our congressional delegation. We are the first state in the country in 2012 to have an all-female delegation, the first state to elect a female governor who we then sent to the Senate. And then we did it again with our next governor. So that we definitely have the capacity to do that. We need to just make sure that we're looking beyond just the federal level and at the state and local level as well.
Exactly, and just use the federal model as a role model. In terms of, are you addressing sort of the money part of it? I was on a national call last week. My CEO colleague from Delta Dental of Colorado is a woman by the name of Helen Drexler, and the topic was something, it really wasn't related to this, but she came from a luncheon probably similar to the one we're going to have on October 19th. And boy, she was energized over pay inequity. And
I think Helen had just come from our sister organization, Women's Foundation of Colorado annual luncheon, which was last week, led by my colleague, Lauren Castile. And their speaker was a woman by the name of Sally Crenshaw, who is really, besides New Hampshire's own Joe Keefe at Impacts, has really led the way in terms of thinking about gender lens investing. And when you think about women's economic security and the way in which we can invest in women and girls, we can think about it in a variety of ways. You start with the gender wage gap, which in New Hampshire is anywhere from 18 to 22 cents on every dollar, meaning that women are making 88 cents to men's dollar for every dollar they earn. It's much, much worse for women and girls of color. And then all the way when you think about gender lens investing, the way in which we are not investing in organizations who otherwise are doing the work that we believe we need to do. 1.9% of total philanthropic dollars go to organizations that support women and girls. And in our opinion, that is a ridiculous number. And we want to be able to change the landscape here in New Hampshire.
Well, Helen was charged up about this, so I'm going to tell her that we did follow up on that. So October 19th, Jay, nhwomensfoundation.org, the 19th Annual Women Building Community Luncheon. And Tan has a lot of other great things planned for 2024, but that'll be another show, or otherwise you'll terminate me from my radio show. We don't want that happening, Jay. I got to stay within my time parameters.
Well, another show for another day, as they say. Yes.
I like that.
Tana Clues, the CEO of New Hampshire Women's Foundation. Go to nhwomensfoundation.org for a ton of information. You can also call 603-226-3355. Again, the number 603-226-3355. She is the guest on this week's edition of Northeast Delta Dental Radio, which we'll have to wrap up. We'll have another one in the not-too-distant future, fear not, here on the Pulse of New Hampshire for Tana Clues, as well as Tom Raffio, the president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental and the host of Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I am J-Dog, and we will be back sometime in the near future with an all-new edition of Northeast Delta Dental Radio right here on the Pulse of New Hampshire.